Welcome back to season 8 of Talking with Traders. This is the fourth year of this podcast since it began in 2020. Once again, IG Markets have come on board as the sponsor of this podcast. We're truly grateful and privileged to have such a global leader in CFD trading as our sponsors. In the coming weeks, I'll be interviewing various guests from around the globe on the topic of trading. Some of these will be past guests that we invite back onto the podcast, and some will be new guests. The idea is to attract a broad spectrum of different perspectives from players in different areas of the markets. None of what you hear here is financial advice, but it is intended to get you thinking about how you might be able to apply what you hear here to your own trading and investing. Remember to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcast app. That way, you'll be notified when new episodes are released. Once again, thank you to IG Markets for sponsoring this podcast into its fourth year. And thank you, listeners, for your continued support of this podcast. Now let's get into this week's episode. Welcome back to another episode of Talking with Traders. And this is actually our final episode of season 8 of this podcast. So it's going to be the last one, and we'll then take a little bit of a break for a few weeks before we launch the next season. My guest this week is Patrick Manelli, and we're going to the idyllic island of Mallorca, Spanish island of Mallorca, where Patrick trades from. Patrick, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for the invite, and thanks for having me on, Garth. I'm looking forward to the chat. I would say the idyllic island of Mallorca has been replicating some of the UK weather just over the past couple of days, so it's just reminded me what it's like to be back in Blighty.
Well, at least if you can say it's only been a couple of days, I can tell you it's been a couple of months here where we're still waiting for summer to start, and it's still grey and a bit drizzly outside today. You know, I know when we did our pre-podcast chat the other day, you were sitting in a t-shirt with the doors open there, and I was sitting in with a jumper and the doors all closed and the heating on here. So it's not, yeah. Anyway, you went on the weather front. But as I always do with guests on this podcast, new guests on this, on Talking Sure. with Traders, I always like to get a little bit of a background story. And I'd like to ask you the same. Can you give us a bit of your story, what your career path has been that has ultimately Sure. led to you being now able to trade from the idyllic island of Mallorca? I mean, that's the dream. And how did Sure. you get there?
Sure. So after I graduated from university, I joined a City PLC consulting firm focused on executive search. This was in the late 90s, not to age me too much. We were involved in executive search within the tech sector. So obviously we were riding the dot-com wave. Me and a couple of the guys who I worked with on the desk decided to leave the comforts of the PLC and go it alone and do our own startup. We had a bunch of clients that we were able to leave with, and basically set about our own firm. And because of the timing of it, it went through a pretty rapid growth cycle over a period of 3 to 4 years. And at that stage, we had the opportunity to merge with another firm, and I decided to cash in my chips. I've been living in London for about 7 or 8 years by that time. I'd been to university in London as well. And my wife at the time wanted to relocate out of London. So, like I say, I cashed in my chips. We moved to the Cotswolds, and I started thinking about what I wanted to do next. I'd made a chunk of capital by that stage, and so I was able to take some time out and think about what I wanted to do. I'd kind of been through the whole corporate development side of things in terms of, you know, chasing, developing clients and closing clients, etc. And so I thought about really wanting to do something whereby I was just totally in control of my own time and what I would be doing with my time. And I had a bunch of friends from university who'd gone into the markets in various formats, either through investment banks or hedge funds or stockbrokers. And obviously, with the nature of the work I've been doing, I'd witnessed, guys make and sometimes lose a fortune in the markets quite literally overnight. So I decided to explore my curiosity for markets. And so, like I say, I had some chips to play with, had time on my hands, so I was able to get involved, and I started day trading the S&P 500. This is back in late 2004. And when I say day trading, what I actually mean really is day gambling at that stage, because there wasn't much real trading going on.
Right.
So I basically would, the market would open and I would buy an up market or sit out if the market was down, wait for it to turn green and buy it on the day and try and, just hold positions. And as is ironically the way I think for most people who get involved in this, there is this uncanny beginner's luck syndrome that kicks in. And so even with the greatest levels of self-sabotage at play, I was still able to manage to make some money. And at one point, it was really starting to rack up quite significant gains. But as is always the way, the market phase shifted. We came into a reversal. The first reversal I remember was coming into really late 2004, and I basically took the view of just averaging down.
Okay.
So as the market pulled back, I just put more size on and tried to get a better average position going,
Right. Yeah.
which, as we all know, is not the most profitable
I was
strategy.
going to say, I sense the story has it's taking a turn in the wrong direction around about now.
So I got through Christmas, got through just about got through January, but then hit February and the market had just pulled back to what I would say was a pretty significant pain point for me. I got off a plane in Paris one morning in February, and I was down a pretty significant six-figure sum. And check the BlackBerry. This tells you how long ago this was. Check the BlackBerry for the update from the broker. Needless to say, the BlackBerry didn't survive the tarmac, and neither did my trading account. It was to say it was a horrific and gut-wrenching experience is an understatement. I mean, I was very fortunate at the time. I still had additional capital left. I wasn't broke, but it was a meaningful sum of money that had gone, and through that whole process, then things got a bit difficult, and ended up getting divorced. Really had to rethink my life and what I was doing and what I was going to do. But something in me. I had a feeling it wasn't a feeling. I could see that people made money in the markets because I had friends who traded, Delta One desk traders at banks making a lot of money. Obviously, a different type of scenario to what I'd been involved in. But so I could see that it was possible. I thought if it's possible for them, it's possible for me. I just have to figure out how to do it. And so I really decided to get serious about trading. And the immediate thing for me was to find a mentor, basically. I'd through my headhunting background, I knew that the best way to achieve excellence is basically to replicate excellence in one form or another. So I used my networking skills and eventually got introduced to a guy who changed my life, taught me more about myself, really, than markets. But through a process about 18 months to 2 years, I really learned the business of trading, not just trading, but the actual business of trading and the difference between that and the difference between say you're a trader and the actual act of trading, which I think are two totally different things. People think to be a trader, you've got to be permanently clicking a mouse or hitting a button. But as those of us who've been around for a while know that that isn't that really isn't the game. So that was to, so by the time I came back to the markets, With a, with a trading plan, with a process in place, back tested, fully understanding risk management processes and how to mitigate risk professionally. I actually took another chunk of my rapidly diminishing capital and came back to the markets in January 2008, which was another tricky period. But the difference was by then I had, I had that I'd had been through the mentoring process. I had a fully back tested plan, and I understood that, adhering to that plan was going to protect me from my worst instincts, basically. And so I stuck to my guns. January 2008, I was down and, mentally started to wobble a bit, but I just thought, you've done all this work, it's got to count for something. Now execute. And so yeah, so came out in the end in January 2008. I was up on the year, and I've been profitable annually every year since then. And so it's been quite a journey. It's not, it's not linear. The road to success is all over the place, but it's are you able to persevere to see it through? And if you do incrementally, if you can incrementally improve, then the net results will be positive. But if you're expected to go from zero to hero, I'd try something else.
Yeah, it doesn't work that way. And as you say, it's not linear, and this game is not an, it's not an ATM that you can just go and pull money out of it every
Certainly
month.
not.
Like
Certainly
you
not.
say, the returns are often lumpy, and you can go for months at a time without making anything and then suddenly make a whole lot. Very interesting backstory though, Patrick. I mean, I must say, because we hadn't really chatted about that before. So
Sure.
it's and I kind of had it in my mind that you were probably an ex-bank trader and had experience. So you came from a totally, basically you were a retail trader who took this up as a, and I want to say inverted commas, as a hobby, which I'm always, wary to use the term hobby because hobbies cost money. But I guess in your case, it was a very expensive hobby to start with. But you've managed to turn it around. So I mean, can you take us through a couple of the smaller things? What did you actually do? Okay, you got a mentor, you started taking it seriously, you started learning about the markets. But I mean, it's not an uncommon story, yours. In fact, it's more common than many people realize, I think. That, a lot of amateur people out there think trading is this mystique that it's easy and you open an account and you just start printing money. It doesn't work that way. It really doesn't work that way, as you've said. And a lot of the time, people do end up getting to kind of rock bottom before they manage to turn it around. And as you said, you managed to persevere. But what were the little things that you'd started to do differently that actually started to put you on the
I
right
mean,
path?
really, I guess, to be perfectly honest, they weren't little things. They were big, tectonic shifts for me. Once I got involved with my mentor, one of the first things he suggested to me was therapy. He said, I mean, one of the first conversations I actually ever had with him, he was he got me to tell him, how I got to where I was and what was going on with me and stuff. And he actually asked, are you annoyed about the money you lost? Do you are you pissed off about that? And I hadn't re because so much had gone on in my life situation at that stage, I'd actually taken the time to think, am I actually angry about what I did? Am I angry about how I behaved because I had to take responsibility for the, for sinking all that cash? And so his immediate recommendation was to go to therapy. And he said, you need some type of self-inventory here because if you come back to this and you don't realize that you're trading from a perspective of revenge and to get back, you're never going to make it. Said, you have to come to this game present and, in a stable state. And I wasn't any of those things at that stage. So it wasn't a small thing I had to do. It was quite a big thing. And so I went through that process. I also took up martial arts, Wing Chun. I've been doing that now for 15 years. And again, that helps with discipline and focus and presence. Because I for a big thing for me, because of the nature of what I was doing before I was trading, was the corporate side of things was always about activity generates income. So you've got to, you've got to be on the phone, you've got to be doing meetings, you've got to be having lunches, you've got to open dinners, because that's going to generate your returns essentially. Whereas what I had to, where I had to shift from being that person, so being like really financially goal orientated, to becoming a process orientated person. So I had to forget about the outcomes, and I had to focus purely upon executing a process that I knew, like I said before, would protect me from my worst instincts. And that was the shift for me, because once I finally got to that stage, this idea I think a lot of new traders starting out struggle with is the living and dying by the outcome of any single trade. That hellish emotional roller coaster of, oh my God, it's going up, oh my God, it's going down. All of it, what once you once it's just a process, that information shouldn't negatively impact you. I mean, obviously, to start with, it does. It takes time to learn and to become comfortable with that. But being present, totally present, just focused on the moment, and reminding yourself that you have executed the process as planned, then let the chips fall where they may. Because I don't care about the outcome of this trade. I don't care about the outcome of the next 10 trades. I'm concerned about the outcome of the next 100, the next 1,000, because that's where my edge is. It's over an extended series of outcomes, not the next outcome and not the next 10.
Fascinating. And I mean, I want to just go back to now, what do you trade? You said you started out trading S&P futures. Are you still trading S&P futures, or where is
Yeah,
your
I mean,
area of
that's
focus?
I would say that's my first love. Yeah, I mean it's much, it's I think with all markets there are idiosyncrasies related to each market, and the more time you spend observing the market, the more you become a fay with those. And there's a degree to which, although, like I say, everything I do is from comes from process, there's a degree to which subconscious pattern recognition comes into play now. I've watched this thing move up and down for nearly 20 years, and over that time my mind has collated information that my brain doesn't necessarily at the front line recognize, but you get that gut feeling. And there are times when it's appropriate to incorporate that information into your day-to-day execution, especially once you've got that level of experience, once you've been trading for a number of years, and you've built in that screen time, and there's a value to that that is difficult to put a, let's say, a percentage input to your returns on, but it certainly plays a part in it, to my mind anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, anyone who's read the book by Malcolm Gladwell, Blink, which
Absolutely.
is exactly that. He talks about intuition and this idea of thin slicing, where if you're really experienced at something, that intuition is just built in. You can't really explain it, but it's there. And absolutely, I mean, I've come across many traders who have that. And I think years and years of watching the screen and watching prices move and watching charts and so on does build up that, as you said, that institutional memory of patterns, which you start to recognize and you
Yeah,
kind of,
the other
instinctively
thing
know.
that really helps with that in terms of helping you to better understand it is, I mean, it's something that I am religious about is journaling. So once you can, once you've got a significant back catalogue of journal inputs, and you can actually gauge those times where it was intuition that was telling you something over impulse, because there's a difference between intuition and impulse, like there's a difference between reacting and responding. There's a fine line between those, and once you understand that, those can be effective tools in helping you progress.
I'm glad you brought up the topic of journaling there, because that was one thing I was wanting to ask you as well. And obviously now you've answered the question. You are a journal. You do journal. That was the first question I was going to ask you. But what does your journal contain?
Everything. I start, with where I'm at mentally. What's going on? Am I, having an argument with my wife today? Has the dog annoyed me this morning? Because all those things that you think or you try and push out and ignore are going to play out in how you interact with the market. Because this whole idea of control and the market gives you the illusion of control at times. And if you're having a bad day and you want to level the playing field, then one of the easiest ways of doing that is through hitting a button. So I think that forms the basis of my journaling. And then it's more about contextual analysis. Where are we in the market? How in sync with the market do I feel? Because there are times when this thing's second nature to me. There are other times when it's alien to me, and that's nearly 20 years into it. So understanding where I am on that linear, I use a scale of 1 to 10 for how in sync I feel with the market. And I use that scale to help me with position sizing. So if I feel like I've got a good read on the market, I'm hitting things well, and I feel in sync with the market, then I'll size up a bit. But if I feel out of sync with the market, or I don't feel that my read is good, then I'll take things down a bit. And just give myself a bit of wiggle room and wait till I get back on the beat of what's going on. And then, so it there's that element to it. And then it comes down to, I went through a period a while ago of wearing a heart monitor. The more you do, like I was saying at the beginning, the more you're doing this, the more there is a high degree of second nature to it. But to get to that phase of second nature, you have to go down all these different little routes to get these different little inputs that then form the foundations of that future ability to have, to be able to move from more of an intuitive perspective than a, plain written down plan perspective, so to speak.
And just quickly, are you still more mostly a day trader, or do you hold position? Are you a swing
No, I
trader,
mean,
or what do you classify yourself as?
I've this was another bit, this was another shift, probably about maybe 10 years ago now, maybe a little less than that. I realized that I had to, from a business perspective, kind of create silos. So I had, obviously I have a X amount of capital. Some of that I use for my day trading in the S&P 500. Some of that I have in another account for what I would call more structural swing type trading, where I'm taking a much longer term view on the market. And then I have a master account. Obviously, I run a managed account service now, so I have a master account where most of my capital is, and I trade that, very conservatively, and that's linked obviously to other accounts. So I have kind of now created, I've got four main accounts really, and they each have different operational roles within my business.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. And in terms of products, I mean, you did mention that you have other accounts with other things, which I guess is normal. I mean, most of us do that. We have, I think, what your approach is sort of normal amongst professional traders, in that you've got an account for very active trading, and then for like slightly more longer term swing trading, and then the long term stuff. But in terms of the active trading, if we focus on that for the moment, are you ever tempted? Do you ever deviate from the S&P 500 futures, or is that pretty much your bread and butter?
I generally, there are periods of time where I just think, the market is all one trade, and so I'll just trade it through the most liquid instrument there is. And then there are times, obviously, there was a bit more bifurcation in the markets, and so, back end of last year, I was pretty active in the dollar index. Started this year a little bit more active in that again. I've been pretty active in gold recently, obviously with the breakout of the Fed cap. Crude oil as well. I used to do a lot in FX, but I created an algorithm about 5 or 6 years ago, and so I tend to let that just run in the Forex markets now. And obviously, with volatility being so low in FX over the past couple of years, there hasn't been, to my apart from obviously this move we've seen in the yen recently, there hasn't been a huge amount to do. So I prefer now to take my FX view and play it through the dollar index.
All right. That's just interesting. I mean, I asked the question because I know, and you'll know, obviously, there's thousands of products available on these platforms. And, I mean, I often think that too much choice is actually a curse. And it can be so overwhelming for a young or any sort of amateurish trader coming on, and you open up these platforms and you've got literally thousands and thousands of different instruments to choose from. It's, often if you've just got one or maybe five to choose from, it just takes the choice down so much, and it allows you to be more focused on something. So it's interesting to hear what you said
No,
about
and
those sort of the big things, right?
I think going back to that idea of, having almost like an intimate relationship with the market in terms of understanding its nuances, you can't do that. I mean, I struggle to do that with five markets. Really, I do. If I was honest, it's just one, it's the S&P 500. But if you're flipping through 40 or 50 instruments on any given day and trying to make sense of it all, good luck, because I think that's going to be very tricky. And then the other thing, obviously, you have is, from time to time, you get headline moves, or that cocoa move, the Bitcoin, and then you get people trying to chase that, ultimately end up, in more trouble than it was worth to start with. So I think it is important, if this is going to be a career for you, then it's like when I was doing the headhunting, I specialized in, CEOs for tech startups. That's all I did, all I focused on. So, and I got pretty good at it. And so I think the same principle applies. If you're obviously, you can replicate process in different markets, but to really take advantage of understanding the nuance of each market, you're better off keep having a narrower focus. From my experience, anyway. I mean, who knows?
I mean, I'd agree with that. I think, less is more in many cases and many things. And I think in this case as well, if you can focus on limited number of instruments and learn them well and make that your focus, I think you're probably more likely to succeed than if you're trying to watch hundreds of different things and trade them all. I know, Patrick, that part of what you do is you're a Titmill partner, and you do share your trades publicly with an audience that are fed through via Titmill. And I know, from chatting to you before, they pay you a fixed fee for this, but you don't get any brokerage or any continuous, benefit from more flow or whatever. Just, I know you wanted that to be quite clear. But the question I want to ask you is, why do you do that? Because presumably you don't have to. You're trading.
I mean,
So I'd like to know, and I think I know what the answer probably is, but I'd like to hear it from your mouth. Why do that? Why publicize your trades to an audience?
I think there are a couple of reasons. One is to show people the realities of this career, because it isn't all gold Lamborghinis and, stacks of $100 bills and a roulette table in Vegas. It's a job. And I show up every day. I work to the best of my ability and come back the next day. And the tip mill group that I run basically documents that, the good, the bad, and the ugly. They get to see. I don't hide. I predefine where I'm, what I'm going to do. I show them that I've done it, and win, lose, or draw, that's it. It's to show that, to my mind anyway, it's to show that if you can, if you're prepared, because what I said to the guys originally is I didn't want this to be a signal service. If that's what you're into, great, but that's not what I wanted to offer. What I wanted to offer was a warts and all view of what it's like to do this on a daily basis in real time. And so the sharing of the trades is not to show how great or how bad I am at this. It's just to show the reality of an equity curve moving up and down like the market does. And it's also to show that that having a plan, coming at this from a rules-based approach, understanding risk management, and being able to replicate the rules-based approach day in, day out, you can make a good living at this. And that's first and foremost why I do it. And second of all, it is kind of a way to give back in terms of showing people, if they're prepared to put in the work and they follow what I'm showing them. And there are guys who have been with me in this group now for 3 years plus, who are managing pretty sizable chunks of cash themselves now, and they've augmented what I do. They don't necessarily replicate it trade for trade or even exactly the same process, but they've taken away the core principles of what I teach and have made it work for them. Because the other thing with trading is that to a large degree, and there's some famous quotes about being given the newspaper with the economic headlines tomorrow and you could still lose money. Me showing someone how to consistently trade doesn't necessarily mean that they'll be able to consistently trade my approach, because everyone's personality is different. And so what I try to explain regularly to the guys is that you take what I'm offering here and adapt it so it fits your personality. Because some people are attuned to or capable of scalping the 1 minute chart, because that just works for them mentally. Their decision making process is sharp, and they're into it. Some people, it needs to be on a weekly chart. They don't want to be stressed. They don't want to you have to be looking at the markets all the time. So it's really to show that they're above and beyond all the crap you see on social media. There is actually a way of turning this into a profitable career. And for some people, it's not necessarily, they don't want a career in it. They just want a second stream of income. And there's a way of making that work as well. So it's really to just give a degree of transparency and reality to what I think can be some fairly murky social media type setups out there. So yeah, that's really it.
That's it. Okay, very interesting. I had a really great podcast with Charlie Burton
Sure.
about 2 or 3 weeks back. And I know you're familiar with Charlie. You've done a bit of work with him.
Yeah.
The podcast I did with him, I really, really enjoyed. It was one of those podcasts which surprised me in just the number of little nuggets that we took away from it. But one of the
Sure.
things that he said, and I know he does a similar thing to you in terms of running a service for a public audience that follows what he's doing. He said that verbalizing his intentions has been, or it's the science, I suppose, verbalizing one's intentions makes your brain process the information in a different way to if you're just sitting there quietly doing it yourself. And I thought about that, and I thought it's very interesting because I mean I also run a similar sort of a business to what you do and to what Charlie does in the sense that I've got an audience that follows what I do and make it
Sure.
public and all of that. But I'd never seen it portrayed in that way to say that your brain The neurons in your brain process the information differently when you actually verbalize what you're going to do to an audience. It's almost like it makes you accountable. Do you find that that is also a helpful reason or helpful part of your interaction with this community that follows you?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess I, you know, from time to time, depending upon what the market action is, I'll drop voice notes into the chat, you know, saying this is where we are, this is what I think is possible, and this is what I'm going to do. There is a degree of that, and there's the same degree in terms of writing it down. I think also there's the idea of almost like affirmations. You know, people, if you repeat something enough, you know, it has a tendency to become your reality. And so I think there is a conceptually that is true. I think the issue for many people, certainly in this era now, which I think is desperately sad, is that there's not enough integrity at times coming through because of social media and because of, you know, these jackasses hiring Lamborghinis to take photos by and present that as the reality. Yeah. Whereas, you know, people like us who've been around the block and been doing this for a while, no, that's just isn't it. And so I agree with the principle, certainly. And, you know, it's something I, to one degree or another, replicate myself. So I think that's valid, definitely.
Yeah, and this is also interesting that, you know, this can be quite a lonely game if you're just sitting at, you know, at home or in Mallorca, you know, by yourself. You're not in a dealing room, you're not sitting amongst other traders, right? And I'm very similar the way I operate here. I work from home. Having an audience, having that sort of interaction with other people, albeit in an online format, it's kind of nice. Sure. You know, it reminds you that you're not alone. There are other people following you, and there are other people in the business with you.
I agree. It certainly, I mean, going back to, you know, my early gambling days, it felt pretty lonely, I'll tell you. I think, again, it's also about finding, you know, finding the type of community interaction that works for you as well. There are some people who want a lot of interaction, you know, some people who crave that, some people who want a degree of interaction, and some people who just want to know that there are other people around. You know, human beings are different. Everyone has a different need, I think, in that respect. And so it is, I guess, finding the right environment for you, as in, you know, finding the right trading style for you, that suits your personality. That's the one that's ultimately going to be most successful. So I think, yeah, the community idea is pretty much the same as finding somewhere that you feel like you fit in is important, because not every community is going to suit every type of trader. And I think that's certainly, when you're starting out, is an important contributing factor to your ability to keep going when it gets shaky. Because if you're on your own and, you know, you're sitting there underwater quite significantly, it can be very, very isolating. So I agree with you. I agree with that.
Yeah. Okay. We're heading towards the end of our time together, but there was one big question I wanted to ask you earlier, and maybe we've kind of gone over it a little bit, but I want to just go back there. Is what has been the most difficult thing that you've had to overcome on your trading journey?
Myself. I mean, to get out of the way of myself. is really it. You know, I think if you're going to take this on as a career, you know, where you want to make a consistent living, then the first thing, or the building block, I would say, the core foundation to making that happen is a degree of self-inventory. You know, understanding what your triggers are, understanding where your weaknesses are, because if you don't understand that, the market will take you apart. because for some reason it will trigger every one of your worst personality traits and then some that you didn't know you had and leave you in a mess. So if you're going to get really serious about this, the first stop is to really have, a high degree of self-awareness, or attain a higher degree of self-awareness, and then in understanding that, and understanding where you come from, the perspective you're coming to the market from, because it can be all sorts of things for very, for different people, to do with money, their relationship with money, past relationships with partners, etc. There's a myriad of things out there, and so getting comfortable with yourself and being able to sit and just watch the market without necessarily having to do anything is what I think is one of my key skills. I don't sit down with the immediate need to think, right, where am I going to get in, where am I going to get out? I can sit and watch the market all day and not do anything, and not even have an internal conversation about, oh, should I have done that, should I have done this. I can just watch it. And I think that comes from, the martial arts, the therapy, just getting comfortable with myself and being able to be present. And in that, you will find you'll be starting to put a proper safety net under yourself to go into what are pretty shark infested waters. So, it's I think that's really important for a new trade. If this is just part time, you're looking for a second source of income or whatever, it's different. But if you're going to do this day in, day out, and you're going to show up when the market opens and leave when it closes, there are some things you need to know about yourself before you get involved,
Dead
because
right.
otherwise, you'll be sitting there looking at a few zero balances.
And unfortunately, that's that is very, very common with people who attempt this. As we know, the statistics are not good
No.
for those who try trading their own capital.
Yeah.
Fascinating, Patrick. It's really been excellent speaking to you.
Pleasure.
If listeners to this podcast would like to follow your work, I mean, I know what you do with Tickmill, it's not sort of
Yeah.
like a retail welcome to everybody kind of thing to follow you. I
No.
know you're catering to a somewhat more sophisticated audience,
Yeah,
but
I would say what we're doing is we're catering towards those who have a, let's say, a degree of proficiency in the market, who understand, the basic setup. But I run a Facebook group for Tickmill. You can find that through the Tickmill website or the blog. For those guys who just want to get a sense of where some potentially interesting trading opportunities are, and a bit of institutional information as well that I share. And then for those who want to take it to the next level, I guess, and who want to get more involved and be more active, I run a chat group associated with that, the Tickmill Facebook group, that has a lot more information in it. And it's, I would say, is more like accessing my trading journal on a day-to-day basis.
So Tickmill on Facebook is the place to go,
It's
basically.
called the Tickmill. You go to facebook.com/TickmillFutures,
All right, Tickmill
and
Futures.
you can request access there, and then I you you'll they'll get added to the group, and then they get an invite to the chat if they want to get involved in that.
Fantastic. All right, excellent. Well, Patrick, it's been a pleasure speaking to you. Your story is a very interesting one. That's not actually what I was expecting at all. But often these sort of somewhat more impromptu discussions are the ones that actually are the most fun and you learn the
Sure,
most. And it was a
sure.
great discussion. Very nice chatting to you. So thank
And to
you.
you too, Bob.
Yeah, thanks for your time. I appreciate it. And enjoy the nice weather in Mallorca and think about us here in the UK where it's still raining and probably will be for a while yet.
Okay, thanks very much for your time, Garth. Good luck.
And you take care. Thank you,
Cheers
Patrick.
now. Bye.
Bye. Thanks for joining us for today's episode of Talking with Traders, brought to you by IG, a world-leading CFD provider. We really are privileged to have such a leader in the field of online trading involved in this series. Please follow us on Facebook and engage with us there. And a reminder to make sure you subscribe to this series by clicking on the subscribe button on your favorite podcast app. If you've enjoyed this podcast, we'd also appreciate if you'd leave a review on the app too. Till next time.